It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. The microphone seems to be feeling a little bit froggy this evening, or else the voice processor, I don't know, a transducer or a transistor or a resistor or a consistor, I don't know. Something got miraculously healed overnight. So, you know, I'm not going to move it around or shake it or anything, and hopefully the audio will be fine and dandy, and I won't get any emails about, oh, Bob, it's too low, or oh, Bob, it's too loud, or oh, Bob, it's crackling up, or anything like that. Who knows? It might be. Every night's an adventure. It just is. This program is live. This program is almost always live. And it is, in fact, the 27th day of July, 2017. The 27th day of July, 2017 is a Friday. No, it isn't. It's a Thursday. Just playing with you. You gotta watch. You gotta listen. No. It's Thursday. Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 27th day of July, 2017. And me? I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes. So we've gotten that part out of the way. As usual, the merry band of real-time multimedia madcap mayhem zany real-time extravaganza participants are waiting for you over in the Horn chat room. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Hoghead and Jugapunch and Silent R. Lamar and VT Blom and Will in Chicago, and of course, midweek utility fill-in pinch hit chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. And they're just waiting for you. So wander on by. It's a fun little conversation. It really, really is. So, okay, well, we'll get the fundraising business out of the way. Remember, we're working on a challenge this week. Courtesy of our buddy Scott, who, as of Monday, announced, or had me to announce, the Send Bob to the Chirping Birds Basket Weaving Funny Farm for a Week challenge. Reminding you that only you can prevent Bob burnout. And it just so happens that if we reach the week's fundraising goal, we will also, at the same time, reach an equal amount to that which Scott, our buddy Scott, has put forward. And if that all works out, right, if that all works out, then I'll be gone. For the first time in over a dozen years, I'll be gone not doing mountaintop removal missionary work, not doing horn stuff, not following politics. I'll just be gone for a week. And the program note that goes along with that is that next week, of course, the program will be a little bit stranger than usual, you know, as long as we remember that normal is nothing more than a setting on a dryer. We will have shortened programs Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week, July the 31st, August the 1st, and the 2nd. We'll have shortened programs from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 5 Pacific. And then at we'll shut down at 8. And then at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, I'll be substituting for the one and only Mike Malloy, the godfather of progressive talk radio. So that's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week, and then Thursday and Friday. Well, Thursday should be ordinary. Friday, I don't know, because Friday is the day before getaway. And so that there's going to be a lot of running around on Friday. And I'm hoping I'll be on air. I don't know that for sure. So, anyway, where does that leave us? Well, we are a mite behind in fundraising. We needed to do $240 a night every night this week. It would have been more, except for the help that we got over the weekend from Peg in the Sandbox, who did have a show on me. But let's see. We pulled up short last night, and not a lot of subscribers, it turns out, on the 27th of the month. We got a couple, though. So that takes it, let's see, and so, yeah, and thanks, by the way, to Jim in España for kicking in today, this afternoon. Thank you, Jim. So if I've got everything square, I think the fundraising goal is somewhere around $400 tonight. Although I can't be for certain, because it all just sort of, well, ciphering, you know, and me, right? So that's where we find ourselves. If you want to help out, if you want to help meet the fundraising goal and join in the matching challenge from our buddy Scott, and help us finish the month of July. Well, just run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute, and then put whatever amount in there you want to put in there. If we're going to work at $400, that would be 10 at 40, 40 at 10, 1 at 400, 2 at 200, 4 at 100, 8 at 50, 16 at 25, 32 at 1250, 64 at 6 1/4, and 128 at $3.13, because we're going to round up from that half penny, and we're going to throw it into the the Gulfstream 5 fund. Okay. We may be a while getting to the Gulfstream 5, but we'll get there. Who am I kidding? All right. If you prefer, well, and by the way, when you go to headonradionetwork.com, there's that little box that says, make this a recurring monthly donation. If you want to put $10 in there and click the box, then it'll just come out the same day of the month, every month, $10. And you'll be part of the overnight crew, the subscription gang. Folks who said it and forget it. We're still trying to get to 100. We need 400. We're trying to get to 100. And I'd say maybe we're over, you know, somewhere, if you count, maybe around 60. But nowhere near 100. So, that. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, because we got to get all this out of the way. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, then the mailing address for Bossman Wayne, who loves to get mail, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y-W-V, 25801. Checks and money orders. Because there are mail processing centers in the United States that are something less than honest. Yeah, we've received mail in the past that said, you know, please find it and enclose the, you know, whatever, and there's nothing in there because it's been opened. So it's best to do checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid. If you want to let me know, I'll have Boss Man Wayne on the lookout. I messaged him the other day when I got a note from Tom for what he had proposed, the Little Ray of Sunshine Challenge, which was met. Thank you very kindly. And if you let me know, I'll tell Boss Man Wayne, I'll tell him he doesn't have to take the spider-proof gloves into the mailbox, and that he can just, garden equipment is now coming with really light, high-strength fiberglass handles. I think he's got one of those. Sometimes he carries that in lieu of the old-style hickory axe handle in case he runs into the grand, exalted, noble, cyclops, dragon, kleagle, wizard of the clan. Because, you know, the clan gets their mail there, too. Yo, well. So that takes care of all of that. And now, at 11 minutes past the hour, we can get down to the business of Thorn in the Side Thursday. Because there are thorns. You know, love is a rose, and you better not pick it. It only grows a handful of thorns, and you know you're right. Yow. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are this evening. Thorn in the Side, Thursday. And we are not without material with which to work. Right. It came along today. It took, 3 full days? It took 3 full days or so for the Boy Scouts of America to figure out just exactly what a disgusting nightmare the President of the United States created at their jamboree here in almost level West by Cole, Trump Genistan. I mean, there's nothing like a president who begins his address to a bunch of the pre and barely post-pubescent scouts by telling them stories of orgies and you know, some low-rent swearing. They say that one mark of onset of senile dementia, one symptom, is the inability to engage in socially, culturally, age-appropriate speech. I think we got a really good example of that when he showed up at the Boy Scout camp. But yeah, he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Comrade Kumquat did. To the point that the Boy Scouts got so much heat that eventually they had to tender something resembling an apology. Not a full-on, Jesus, that was really awful kind of apology. But instead, the kind of an apology a half-hearted apology. Chief Scout Executive Michael Serbaugh. This is what he said. I want to extend my sincere... Now, listen to this and just tell me if this sounds like a sincere apology, because he says he's extending sincere apologies. We're going to put this to a sincerity test, and you're going to be the judge of it. I want to extend my sincere apologies to those in our scouting family who were offended by the political rhetoric that was inserted into the jamboree. That was never our intent. The invitation for the sitting U.S. president to visit the National Jamboree is a long-standing tradition that has been extended to the leader of our nation that has had a jamboree during his term since 1937. It is in no way an endorsement of any person, party, or policies. Nonpartisan, and refuse to comment on political matters. We sincerely regret that politics were inserted into the scouting program. Is that good enough? I mean, it really doesn't matter whether it is or isn't good enough. It's what you get. And it's not like they're going to have a do-over. Well, son of a gun. It looks an awful lot like we're buffered up and not broadcasting. Give me a second here. Just what I was looking for in the way of a thorn in the side. Server troubles. Go figure. Yeah, there it went. Ta-da! Dead as a stump. Thanks, Frontier! Because, you know, it's raining outside. Right. Well, we'll try this again in a minute. All right, shall we try this again? Sure, why not? It is 6:33 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We've just lost a whole bunch of, well, a good quarter hour of programming. We were into the first story of, Thorn in the Side Thursday here. When Frontier Communications, at Frontier Corp, on Twitter, crashed again. So I'm going to take a moment here, just because, you know, we do news stories, we talk about stuff. Oh, thank you, Sister Carol Baker. I needed that. I can hear you! Now you can. Now you can. Great. Thanks, Les, letting me know I'm back on TuneIn. And Brother Deacon Asa letting me know back at 18:32 hours. So let me explain, because there, you know, some people are bored by this. I mean, if you were just driving around in the car and this was on some AM radio station, you don't give a damn why the thing went off the air. Because, you know, it's radio and maybe it was a lightning strike or something. Who knows? But internet broadcasting is a little bit different because there are a whole lot of people out there who actually know rather a good bit about the nature of what's going on here. And that being the case, I thought you might like to know. There are a multitude of ISP router manufacturers out there. For a couple of years, Frontier was doing business with a company called Action Tech. And then they weren't doing business with them anymore. And being a gearhead, and there's a lot of gearheads in the Horn Family Community Congregation, too. This is just interesting stuff. The Action Tech routers worked pretty well, and they were pretty flexible. You could do stuff with them. Well, somebody got a bug up their ass about, you know, somebody in the accounting department said, well, you know, Bill, we can probably save a billionth of a penny on every transaction if we move over to these routers by the Aris company, ARRIS. Yeah, I've seen them. Yeah, they don't work worth a shit, but you know, that billionth of a penny adds up over time. And so, you know, that dude got a promotion cuz this is the way that Frontier works. Because Frontier is terrible. And so instead of the Action Tech, well, after the lightning strike that took us down, what, a couple of months back, and it came in on the actual internet line and fried a bunch of crap. I saved the old Action Tech because you can actually hear the resistor or whatever it was that it blew off the motherboard. And it just rattles around in the old unit now. I just hung on to it for a souvenir. But they came in, and they had to replace everything with these Aris, ARRIS, routers. Mm-hmm. And they are, in a word, shitty. We have to come back and reset these routers at least once to twice a day. And over the last couple of nights, it has crashed mid-program. Now, that probably has something to do with the fact that it has rained at the same time I was doing the program for the last couple of nights. Because, see, rain will crash a Frontier internet connection. Wind will crash a Frontier internet connection. I'm not talking about howling gales of wind. I'm not talking about rain like what Sister Carol Baker lived through out in Hooterville over the last 24 hours, where they were rescuing people with boats out of second-story windows in Kansas City, Missouri, because the entire Missouri River Basin had left, the river had left its banks. You know, no. I'm talking about, you know, honey, what's it doing out there? It's raining. Is it raining hard? Nah, it's just rain. That will take down a Frontier internet connection. Yeah. So we've got rain, we've got wind. And again, not tornado force winds. We're talking about the kind of, you know, if it's been like hot outside and you're mowing the grass or weed eating and you're just sweating, I mean, you're just pouring, and then all of a sudden a little wind comes through, just a gentle breeze, and you stop for a minute and you think, damn, that's almost like, and you kind of grab your shirt and you pull it out and you let it snap back just to get that little movement of air going against your skin. And you're like, wow. That's almost like air conditioning. And it's just, and then it's gone. Well, that will take down a frontier internet connection. Or then there are those days when the wind isn't blowing and the rain's not raining and the sun is just pounding down, and it's like the Appalachian Mountains are a freaking anvil and the sun is a hammer and there's not a cloud in the sky, no rain for days in the forecast, and not a breath of air moving. That will take down a frontier internet connection too. Snow, I've remarked in the past, the snows that happen before New Year's Day are beautiful. You know, that first dusting of snow that you sometimes get maybe a week after, you know, Thanksgiving or so, and you're like, oh, it's back. And suddenly you remember the heat of summer and that day when you were mowing and there wasn't a cloud in the sky and the air wasn't moving, and it just felt like, it felt like you were an anvil and the hammer and the sun was the hammer. And you go, oh. And you kind of revel in the coolness of it. You know, and the snowflakes come down light and tiny. And it's beautiful because it hasn't been doing it a lot. Well, that'll take down a frontier connection too. A little buck deer with his antlers still in velvet, maybe a little 6-point like I saw this afternoon in my neighbor's front yard. He's still more red than gray because summer's still with us. Well, his shadow crossing a road that is sometimes driven on by a frontier truck will cause a frontier internet connection to go down. Sunspots, thank you, VT Blom in the chat room, will make a frontier internet connection go down, even if they're on the sun, the star around which the Norblap system revolves thousands of light years away. That'll make a frontier system go down. Crying babies will make a frontier system go down. A tomcat searching for a cat in heat and yowling in the backyard. Wow, that'll make a frontier internet connection go down. The sound of water running across a toothbrush will make a frontier internet connection go down. What am I saying? If you live somewhere that you've got Frontier and you've got some other internet service provider from which to choose, choose the other internet service provider. I have Frontier because they're the only people who can provide me with a static IP. And I have to have one of those in order to connect the gizmo to Progressive Voices when I fill in for Malloy. It's the only game in town. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Darlene says, yep, dead on, balls accurate about Frontier, Bob. See the same thing here in Connecticut. That's true. I'm informed by Kelly that holding your mouth the wrong way will make Frontier go down. Absolutely. You think people like Darlene and me and Kelly are kidding? We're not. I mean, no, I don't get a lot of emails from members of the Horn Family Community Congregation saying, gee, Bob, I love my ISP. Not really. It's like people saying, I love my insurance company. Doesn't happen. You know, I love my repo man. But still, you would have to suck a lot to be as bad as Frontier Communications. A whole lot. And of course they got caught, you know, basically ripping off We the People along the way too. A whole bunch of money came into West Virginia, and Frontier said, "For me." No, but they took it anyway. Marty says, "Don't you wish you were in Europe, where they not only have network neutrality, but they also have higher-speed internet for a much lower price?" Then there's South Korea, the fastest internet on Earth. But we can't have that because capitalism and the free market. Because America's interpretation of capitalism and the free market is that people should be charged as high a price as possible for the least quality deliverable. And what I was mentioning last night is a story I mentioned, a week or so ago. File this under, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. The West Virginia legislature passed, and Governor Jim Justice signed into law a statute to allow co-ops to form to deliver decent internet service to places that aren't served by shitty cable companies and shitty phone companies. And lo and behold, Frontier and Shentel and Suddenlink and all the other, "We can't have that. They might mess up our equipment, because they ain't near as competent as what we is. We knows what we is doing. We deliver some of the shittiest internet in America, and we knows how to do that. And we don't want them moving our shit around on the poles and maybe screwing up and making us deliver decent internet." Yeah. Randy in PA says, "It's some of that conservative monopoly free market competition." You got it. You got it, Randy. Absolutely. So that's where we are. And I apologize for the interruption. And I will, sure as I can, try to get us back on track. And I just needed to get that out of my... I needed to get that out of my system, because otherwise it'd be on my mind, and I would just, it just wouldn't be any, I'd just be distracted. Yeah. Yeah, see over at my post on, in the Horn group, Haley in Arkansas says, "And I thought CenturyLink was the pits." Michael in Madison says, "I am reminded of that classic poem. By E.E. Cummings. Yeah, classic indeed. I'm just a little too addled, Michael, to be able to read it right now, as a matter of fact. Clarity pointing out, "Rural high-speed internet, you are more than delusional. Wildernesses are supposed to be quiet." And maybe that's the thing. We're supposed to be a goddamn wilderness here. Yeah. You know what? I wonder if the internet crashes like this over at the Summit Bechtel giant galactic spaceport Boy Scout camp that hillbillies aren't allowed to really go on much here in this same county where Donald Duck Draft was hanging out a couple of days ago. I've been reminded, by the way, that, by Frontier, that they're here for me 24/7. Oh, good. Because all the other calls worked, so that did so much good. But let's get, I mentioned the Summit Bechtel Great Big Giant Intergalactic Boy Scout Spaceport for a reason, because that's where I was a couple of minutes ago when we so ignominiously left the air. I mean, this is worse internet than the Wi-Fi at a fucking Super 8, okay? I'll get this out of my system and shut up, Bob! Damn it! No, we'll be okay. 10 minutes before the hour, and let me just get this out of the way, just by way of a reminder. Yeah, we're trying to raise $400 this evening. I'll just sort of leave that laying there on the table. Yeah, Clarity telling me, oh yeah, they all use the rejected, recycled Korean wiring. We get what doesn't work over there. Who knows? Anyway, when Frontier crashed, I was in the process of sharing with you the official Boy Scouts of America apology. And you know, there's breaking news. We'll get to that. The House and Senate have managed to pass their Russia sanctions bill, and it is veto-proof. So we're gonna see the first real showdown between the Congress and the President. And we're gonna find out if maybe he's gonna get a call from his owner. I mean, buddy, Vlad Putin, saying, "Hey, Donald, I see sanctions bill is laying on your desk. You will veto, no? You will veto, yes. Because I was just sitting here watching some home movies. It's compelling movie of man watching prostitutes pee-pee on bed in presidential suite. It is interesting viewing. Other people might like to also see my pee-pee tape. You have seen pee-pee tape, remember, Donald?" "Yeah, but they get a veto-proof majority. That means I can't do anything about it. I can veto it, sure, and I'll be happy to do whatever you want me to, but it's vetoed, and they can make it law even if I veto it." "Well, this is when you use some persuasion on people like your Mitch McConnell and your Paul Ryan. A little friendly persuasion. Say in your Air Force One with door open. This is how we handle such things in Mother Russia." I guess we could try that. It worked with Shelley Moore Camel to Capito the other day. See, all you have to do is try. So, I mean, that's out there. The sanctions. Vlad won't like them. But we couldn't have President Clinton because she was going to start World War III, remember? Yeah, I know. I mean, don't you remember? Don't you remember how Silly Jilly said that she would be worse than Trump as president?
Yeah, she said that.
Anyway, the Boy Scout apology. We were in the middle of analyzing whether or not this constitutes an apology. Chief Scout Executive Michael Serbaugh said, I want to extend my... I almost did that in the Russian accent. I'm sorry. Said, I want to extend my sincere apologies to the... That Russian accent's almost irresistible. I want to extend my... I want to extend my sincere apologies to those in our scouting family who were offended by the political rhetoric that was inserted into the jamboree. That was never our intent. The invitation for the sitting U.S. president to visit the National Jamboree is a long-standing tradition that has been extended to the leader of our nation and that has had a jamboree during his term since 1937. It is in no way an endorsement of any person, party, or policies. For years, people have called upon us to take a position on political issues, and we've steadfastly remained nonpartisan and refused to comment on political matters. We sincerely regret that politics were inserted into the scouting program. And my question, as Frontier was crashing, is, does that qualify as a sincere apology? Because it's pretty weak in my book. What did they expect? I mean, if you invite... If you invite a leopard, do you expect it to show up and be a lamb? I mean, what was the conversation that took place? Well, I guess we got to invite Trump. I mean, we've invited every president. I mean, we even invited that one, you know, when he was living in our White House. So we got to invite him. I mean, surely to goodness, he'll tone it down a little bit. I mean, these are the scouts, for God's sakes. I mean, these are upright and honorable and they never smoke or cuss or carry on if anybody's looking. Yeah. Well, what about our internal bylaw that says that we can't do any politicking or anything? You know he's going to politic. You know he's going to talk about his crowd size, or his electoral college victory, or talk about somebody some having sex with some woman. Yeah, but I guess we got to invite him. Here's my question. Why did it take 2 days for this invitation to go out? Why wasn't the apology tendered almost immediately, or maybe they had a sudden power outage or something there at the Boy Scout camp so that his mic got cut off? He never would have known the difference. He was only hearing himself. Yeah, I know. But it becomes a question of intent, doesn't it? Because you know that just the same as there were families that were bothered and disgusted by it, there were also families who were, yeah, by God, you tell them, Donald Trump, you're making America great again. Oh, Jesus. So we got that. And what makes it particularly funny is the official White House liar, you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, daughter of pastor, brother, former governor, former presidential candidate, diabetes cure snake oil salesman, Mike Huckabee. Yeah, that Huckabee. You got to figure she knew the question was coming, don't you? This courtesy of CNN.
I'm going to ask you about the Boy Scouts.
You got to make it count.
Chief wrote this to...
family members who were at the president's events earlier this week. I want to extend my sincere apologies to those in our scouting family who were offended by the political rhetoric that was inserted into the jamboree. That was never our intent. We sincerely regret that politics were inserted into the scouting program. Does the president owe the Boy Scouts an apology?
I was at that event, and I saw nothing but roughly 40 to 45,000 Boy Scouts cheering the president on throughout his remarks. And I think they were pretty excited that he was there.
That's not the question she asked. That's not the question Kristen Welker of NBC asked. She said, does the president owe the Boy Scouts an apology? And, you know, to the extent that he talked about orgies and he swore in front of them and did everything but, you know, have a shot in the beer and maybe a couple of cigarettes and bring out a hooker or two. Yeah, he does owe him an apology, but, you know, the Tangerine Tiberius would start tweeting about, oh, I don't know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders' body shape or something if she was to actually tell the truth. By the way, for people pondering whether or not they should just go ahead and be full-on agnostic or atheist, this is a good moment because that God that Sarah Huckabee Sanders believes in, if he was real, here in the first 37 seconds, pss, lightning bolt, gone. People like Sarah Huckabee Sanders prove the non-existence of God every day with their own behavior.
And happy to hear him speak to them.
But the head of the Boy Scouts has acknowledged that there's a problem. A lot of parents have expressed frustration in the wake of those comments and felt the need to actually write a letter about it. So does the president owe them an apology?
Again, I was at that event and heard...
Yeah, sister, we didn't ask you if you were at the event, goddammit. You've already told us that once. We asked you, does he owe an apology? And you're not going to answer it the second time, are you? Are you? No, you're not. Because you're a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian liar.
Nothing but a lot of cheering and probably one of the most energetic crowds I've seen in front of the president. And so I don't have anything to add. I haven't seen the statement from the Boy Scouts. So
yeah, she just read it to you there, Sarah. You know, the book that book you worship has that line in it about let those with eyes to see see, and let those with ears to hear hear. I guess yours are stopped up because you didn't hear her actually read the Boy Scouts statement, which really wasn't much. I mean, I guess it's too much to expect that the head of the Boy Scouts would say, this was a violation of just about every moral and ethical principle the Boy Scouts stand for, and Jesus Christ, we're really sorry, and even if he's reelected in 4 years, you can bet your ass we are not going to ask him back. Because, see, that was another thing that the Clementine Caligula said. Obama never came here. Did Obama ever come here? And that's when he got him to boo Obama. And he said, but we came here, and we'll be back. We'll definitely be back. We'll definitely be back. In other words, he was telling them that he's going to be reelected president of the United States in 2020, and that he looks forward to returning to to tell some more dirty stories to some more pre, mid, and post-pubescent kids 4 years from now. Oh, gosh, how lucky. Just think, the 12-year-olds that were in the audience this year, maybe they'll be 16-year-old scouts working on their Eagle badges by the time he comes back. Right. Maybe by then there'll be a merit badge for pussy grabbing. Or Twitter bullying. Jesus. Nope, sorry, he's not there. Be-de-deep. The God to whom you just prayed no longer exists. If this were the God to whom you had just prayed, a lightning bolt would have exited the sky and reduced Sarah Huckabee Sanders
to a little greasy spot. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. Randy in PA said, God seems to be a few lightning bits short of a quiver. Oh, Jesus, don't say quiverful. That's another one. You know, that's a movement of which the Sanders, Huckabees, you know, the Huckabees are fully supportive. And you remember those creepy people from Arkansas? Of course you do. And so that. And then there's the overarching question, and I'm aware of it. The overarching question of, is this a thing? Is the Boy Scouts issue a real issue that we need to be paying attention to? Is the trans ban in the military a real issue that we need to be paying attention to? Because there were mumblings coming out of the White House that they were all very excited that people were talking about the trans ban yesterday and the Boy Scouts for the last couple of days, because that meant that people weren't talking about his cyberbullying of poor little delicate flower of Southern gentility, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third. So we weren't talking about that. And especially that we weren't talking about precious little Jared and that poor kid, that poor 39-year-old kid, Uday, I mean Don Jr. Because those are the things that seem to really bother people. Or did, or might, somehow, something. And meanwhile, over there, Lindsey Graham in the Senate has decided to get terribly, terribly butch about the whole Senator Sessions thing. He's going to have a fight on his hands if he fires Jeff Sessions. Oh, he will. Yeah, you're just like Lindsey. You're just like the Romulans. Okay. It was centuries before we ever saw a Romulan, saw anything of a Romulan besides assholes and elbows. Mm-hmm. That would be our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. We hear Lindsey say really butch things about how tough he'll be on the president if he fires a delicate flower of Southern gentility. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third, but then he never does anything. Talk, 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 talk. No do. But it's hard to resist talking about some of this stuff. Me, I would not care if he fired Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third 15 minutes ago, because the man is a walking human rights constitutional disaster. As I mentioned last night, from the prison industrial complex to cracking down on the marijuanas to immigration issues to something that he sent his Justice Department lawyers out to do in the last couple of days. Were you aware of this? It's not just the trans ban. Oh, no. Uh-uh. No. Here, this past Wednesday, you know, yesterday, Justice Department lawyers went into court. And they filed an amicus brief in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. And it's kind of bizarre because It's a case in which the U.S. government and the Justice Department isn't even a party to the case. They were just filing an amicus brief. They were just sticking their nose in where it didn't belong. And it's what's in that amicus brief that you're going to find interesting. In the amicus brief, the Sessions Justice Department states, the sole question, it's the Sessions Justice Department, so a certain accent is called for. The sole question here is whether, as a matter of law, Title VII reaches sexual orientation discrimination. It does not, as has been settled for decades. Any efforts to amend Title VII's scope should be directed to Congress rather than the courts. The essential element of sex discrimination under Title VII is that employees of one sex must be treated worse than similarly situated employees of the other sex, and sexual orientation discrimination simply does not have that effect. Now, what is the case? Well, it starts in 2010. Donald Zarda was a skydiving instructor. And he wasn't a sole proprietor skydiving instructor with his own plane and his own pilot. No, he worked for a company. And he sued his employer in the U.S. District Court in New York, and he said that he was fired because he was gay. And he said that that violated Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And the lower court ruled. The case went up on appeal. And then the Second Circuit Court of Appeals invited amicus briefs. Now, they did not send the invitation to Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, wrapped with a bow around a mint julep or nothing. But he just heard about it, and he thought it'd be a good thing to do. Which makes things kind of interesting, because one of the people on Donald Zarda's side is the federal government, and particularly the executive branch of the federal government. That's right, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission inveighed on behalf of the plaintiff who was fired for being gay and has filed, has submitted its own filing in support, because it is the stated position over the period of the last several years that, in fact, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 does ban anti-gay discrimination, and their reasoning is that anti-gay discrimination is based on sex stereotyping and is, as a result, a form of discrimination based on sex. Let's go back to the Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III Justice Department filing. The EEOC is not speaking for the new United States, and its position about the scope of Title VII is entitled to no deference beyond its power to persuade. You know what's interesting here? Arguably, the Justice Department is pissing all over the rules of ethics. Because, see, even though it exists as a part of the executive branch, and even though Comrade Kumquat thinks that the Attorney General is his personal lawyer, his own little private Atticus Finch, out there doing, working on Donnie's entailment in exchange for a bag of gold-plated Russian hickory nuts. That ain't true. The EEOC is arguably a client of the Justice Department. Now, just because the Justice Department has its own lawyers doesn't necessarily change that. You want sad? Even if Donald Zarda wins, he's already lost. He died in 2014 in a base jumping accident. But cases don't always die with the plaintiff. And in this instance, until it is declared moot because of his death, it hasn't. But the reason that the Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III Justice Department has filed in this case is because the Obama administration took the position that gender identity was included under the ban on sex discrimination under Title VII, of the Act. Among other things, that means that you can't discriminate in hiring and firing based upon whether someone is trans or not. And in 2016, the Obama administration declined to try to dismiss a case brought on the grounds that a person was fired for being gay. Remember last night I mentioned the ancient concept of damnatio memoriae? Well, this is that. Anything that the Obama administration did, these vicious pricks in the Trump regime are going to try to erase from history. If they could erase the entire 8-year period of the Obama presidency, please believe me when I tell you that they would do exactly that. And this is, of course, par for, the personal philosophies of Jefferson Davis, Beauregard Sessions III. If he could figure out a way to undo the entire 1964 Civil Rights Act, you bet your ass he would. Remember, he arguably approved of the case that was brought from the state of Alabama, huh? Remember? That gutted Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which unleashed a goddamn flood tide of voter suppression and voter oppression and voter elimination legislation in the several states. Why, thank you. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar. Amen, Bob. You hit it out of the fucking park, my brother. Thank you. That's very kind of you. So, I won't be shedding any tears. over the cyberbullying of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. None at all. And frankly, if they decide to settle it like gentlemen on the field of honor, that's fine by me too. If Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III decides to start tweeting back, that's cool. Because the more tied up he is, maybe the less time he's got for hurting people. And so far, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III has shown in his performance as Attorney General that that is the primary focus of his mission, is to hurt people. I mean, God damn, how bad is it? When a Republican Senate committee has to take action to stop Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III from hurting people, the Republican-controlled Senate Appropriations Committee happened just today. There was a budget bill before the committee, and the committee approved an amendment proposed by a Democratic senator. Oh my Jesus, really? Maybe a rift is opening up in space-time and we're all going to be sucked into it, into an alternate universe. Maybe it's the one where there's a good Trump. Nah. You only get sucked into alternate universes where people walk around with shitty goatees. Second Star Trek reference. But Patrick Leahy of Vermont said, the federal government can't investigate everything and shouldn't, and I don't want them pursuing medical marijuana patients who are following state law. And the Republican-controlled Senate Appropriations Committee said, you're right. And so, with Democrats and Republicans voting together, they voted to tell the Department of Justice not to use any of its funds to keep states from implementing their own laws regarding the use, distribution, possession, or cultivation of medical marijuana. Why did Pat Leahy need to do that? And why did Republican senators agree? Precisely because Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, Attorney General of the United States, has announced that he wants to use the resources, the vast resources of the Department of Justice, to go after cancer patients who smoke a little pot to feel better and maybe be able to choke down a goddamn meal. Bastard. Will it come to anything? Will it mean anything? I don't know. I don't know what'll happen with a similar measure if it pops up over in the House of Bedlam. For all I know, if it shows up in the House of Representatives, Steve Cantaloupe's King and Louis Asparagus Gohmertz will run to the nearest goddamn microphone and start screaming about how marijuana makes Ottoman armies castrate Janissaries again. Jesus! But, of course, there are the pearl clutchers and the hand-wringers out there. Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama, standing up for his buddy. He said, now, civil liberties and states' rights are important. But it runs against legal principles to be telling the DOJ what federal laws to enforce and what not to enforce. If Congress wants to tell the Department of Justice to stop enforcing the medical marijuana laws, then it should change the authorization within the Judiciary Committee, not through an appropriations provision. Clarity points out, Sessions is a chiseler, Bob. Chipping on the Bill of Rights. Giuliani's right there in a dress, waiting to take over as U.S. Attorney General. Won't that be fun? Yeah. Now Giuliani's not transsexual. He's just a casual cross-dresser. No, okay, just. That was probably unfair. But the most we can tell is that he's a casual cross-dresser. And wasn't there a picture of him and Trump with him dressed up all faboo? I mean, you know, Rudy dressed up all faboo. But in case you doubt me, here's the quote from Sessions. He sent it to House and Senate leadership back in May.
I believe it would be unwise for Congress to restrict the discretion of the department to fund particular prosecutions, particularly in the midst of an historic drug epidemic and potentially long-term uptick in violent crime. The department must be in a position to use all laws available to combat the transnational drug organization.
Transnational? Oh, my God. Drag queen. That's why he's upset. Drag queen drug dealers.
Transnational drug organizations and dangerous drug traffickers who threaten American lives.
What an odious jackass.
Historic drug epidemic.
Really? There's a historic drug epidemic of cancer patients trying not to feel shitty for the rest of what remains of their lives?
Well, bless my soul, Attorney General Sessions. Bless my soul.
Nonetheless, representing Dana Rohrabacher, he says he's going to offer the amendment to the House Committee Justice and Science Appropriations Bill. Something similar. To what Senator Leahy introduced. He said, I think people will listen to their own constituents rather than Sessions. This may be an overly ambitious, overly optimistic statement. Because it sure as shit hasn't worked that way in regard to healthcare, has it? But still, that's a pretty unheard of moment. For Republicans to pass a Democratic amendment in the Senate to keep Jeff Sessions from trying to ruin cancer patients and epilepsy victims' lives. So, cool, huh? Meanwhile, going back to the trans ban, I wanted to share something with you. We need some good news now and then. And this came in, I mentioned last night because Matt told us about the spontaneous protest that was called for Harvey Milk Square in San Francisco last night. Yep, by God, that is. Thank you, Carol Baker. It's a photograph of Donald J. Goddamn Trump and occasional cross-dresser Rudy Giuliani. I thought it was Trump with Giuliani in that. Mm-hmm. but Matt sent this along about 7 minutes before airtime from a friend's page about what they encountered after the protest yesterday. A story to brighten your day. I'll tell you what, would this program be the same if I could figure out some way to pay the rent in San Francisco and do the program from civilization? I don't know. But, God, I love that town. A story to brighten your day. Last night I was exhausted after the transgender rights rally in March, so I flagged a taxi to go home. The Pakistani driver saw the rally still going on in Civic Center Plaza and asked what it was about. When I told him that the president had decreed a ban on all trans people from the military, he shook his head with sadness and said, "Such a terrible president. He shouldn't treat these people like that." He then told me his own story. When he first brought his family to San Francisco from the dangerous Pakistan-Afghan border to escape war and seek medical treatment for his seriously ill young daughter, he knew no English, had little money, and didn't know where to turn. Somehow, they ended up at Family Link on Castro Street, which provides housing and support to families dealing with life-threatening illness. He laughed and said, "Imagine that. A Muslim Pakistani family ends up living with a Catholic nun on Castro Street." While they lived there, the neighborhood rallied around him and his family. They got him into English as a second language classes at City College. They helped him find employment. They helped the family acclimate and survive. But mostly, they made them feel welcome and safe. The Castro was his first experience in the U.S., and that's why he will forever stand by the LGBT community, because they stood by him. Matt adds, my notes, "This is the America I want to live in and contribute to. Hashtag resist." I read that just a little bit before airtime for myself, and I had to take a moment, because that's beautiful. That is the America we want to live in. That's an America worth living in. That's a place with more of a sense of community than just about any mega church in this country. This is probably not the right place to inquire why that or how that sense of community developed. I'll leave that to people who know it far better than I. But it's damned well a community worth having. It's a community worth envying. That sense of community doesn't exist around here. You know, unless you like standing around at the Shell station at 11 o'clock at night telling Obama nigger jokes, you're kind of out in the cold. Sorry for using the word, but that's what it is, and that's what they are. I was on my one lone, ever so brief, far too brief trip to the Bay Area. I was impressed by the degree to which the city felt open, felt welcoming. Of course, if it turned out that I won the Mega Millions tomorrow night, I could maybe afford $200 million. Might get me the way the housing market is in San Francisco, might get me a cardboard box over a sewer grate. I don't know. But it is worthy, that community is worthy of our admiration, our aspiration, and our emulation. So thanks for sending that in, and Matt, and providing providing that moment of uplift. Uplift indeed. So we will take the break at the halfway mark this evening. Our buddy Scott's challenge remains on the table. We remain $400 behind on it. Hopefully we can take a little bite out of that this evening, so that it won't be a $640 hole tomorrow, because these, I don't know, I worry about Friday on the Front Porch Miracles. I'm sure, Marty. Marty says, but it would be a very nice cardboard box. Oh, without a doubt. More stories. Without a doubt, to come. On the other hand, we could have some conversation, too, because this is, after all, conversation radio. And you're welcome to participate. You know how. The stress line, named for the immortal Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676, or 304-574-8178, and from anywhere on the planet, 304, no, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And if you'd like to be part of the conversation, use any of those. And by Jove, you will be. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is the radio that you make happen. Bose doesn't make this happen. The Buy Gold Now folks don't make this happen. Mattress companies and vacuum cleaner makers and purveyors of herbal erection tonics and hair growth remedies don't make this happen. Sputnik doesn't make this happen. Russian oligarchs don't make this program happen. You make this program happen. And I don't know about you, but I'm mighty proud of it. I'm proud of what y'all have built. I'm not blowing my own horn. I'm proud of what you've built. The community you have made. I'm proud of the fact that I don't have to sit here behind the microphone wondering about who I might offend. What advertiser I might lose if I say the wrong thing. And as far as I can tell, this is the only way to be able to do that. So I thank you for that opportunity. I thank you deeply and profoundly. because there just aren't very many people out there doing this work that are quite as free as you make me. Sure, some people ran away, some people quit supporting the program when I refused to go all Bernie or bust or declare that Hillary was the devil, or refuse to say that the election was anything but the fault of people who did not vote for Hillary Clinton. Yeah, we lost some support that way. And no, you really, really can't cook up a hot pot of integrity and have it for dinner. But it sure does make doing this program and make our community a lot nicer place to be. Because I'm under no obligation to talk about sex robots instead of an autocratic Russian who orders journalists murdered. I'm under no obligation to bow and scrape and kowtow to people who don't even understand the American political process. And I and you can talk about any goddamn thing we want to and not worry about getting called on the carpet by the advertising department and, oh, we're going to lose the Pesticide Corporation of America, Bob! I only mention this because sometimes I think we don't think about it. What it means to have our own community that we fund and we support. So yeah, let's take a break. This is The Horn. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
Slay it and pry it, subset it and get to know. It's Thursday, July 27, 2017.
How much is sea level going to rise by the end of this century?
U.S. Coast Guard planning for 6 feet of sea level rise by 2100. As the House Science Committee chairman pushes the myth that climate change will be, quote, beneficial. Rome may go to water rationing amid record drought. Plus,
this trend could be a red flag for men's health overall.
Environmental factors linked to serious decline in men's sperm counts.
You're doing that story?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Donald Trump sees the presidency the same way he sees one of his companies. Its whole purpose is to serve him and only him. The same way he probably thinks the purpose of the energy department is to charge his iPhone.
Like it's not. This is your Green News Report.
Plug it in, Rick. Daddy's got a tweet.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm waiting to find out, only sort of, how sperm count has anything to do with green news.
Oh, you're going to like this.
Doubt it.
An ominous new study finds that sperm counts have dropped by more than half in men living in industrialized Western nations.
Fantastic.
In a review of 185 studies covering tens of thousands of men since 1973, researchers documented men's sperm counts have declined 59%. Now, they did not see the same decline in Asian or African countries. The researchers suspect the decline is due to exposure to commonly used chemicals that are widespread in the West, like pesticides, lead, and chemicals used in plastics and fire retardants that are known to increase or decrease production of certain hormones.
I think I deserve an award for the 10 or so snarky comments that I did not interrupt you with during that story.
Admirable restraint.
You're welcome.
The Department of Energy has confirmed that a well-known Russian prankster posing as a Ukrainian energy official succeeded in fooling Energy Secretary Rick Perry into participating in a pretty straightforward 20-minute phone call in which Perry defended President Trump's plan to withdraw from the historic Paris Climate Agreement and even pressured Ukraine to incentivize U.S. oil and gas exploration by U.S. companies. But Secretary Perry did not mention U.S. renewable energy technology.
Nothing to talk about there, I guess.
Apparently not.
Well, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but apparently you can fool Rick Perry all of the time.
Most people who see the melting Arctic firsthand respond with alarm, but not Republican Congressman Lamar Smith of Texas, a climate science denier who is chairman of the House Science Committee. After recently touring the melting Arctic, Smith wrote an op-ed urging the public to focus on what he called the benefits of global warming, like the opening up of new shipping lanes in the Arctic and the expansion of oil and gas extraction.
Good God.
But the U.S. Coast Guard does not agree. At a recent symposium on impacts of climate change, the commandant of the Coast Guard, Admiral Paul Zukunft, said, again, the United States does not have the infrastructure to deal with an oil spill or increased shipping in the pristine Arctic.
But I can assure you that if there is an oil spill, we're not going to recover all that oil because we don't have the infrastructure up there.
More importantly, he said, the Coast Guard is planning long-term measures to protect and adapt Coast Guard facilities and infrastructure to rising seas caused by the man-made global warming that Representative Smith calls a hoax.
How much is sea level going to rise by the end of this century? I'm using a planning factor of 6 feet, 2 meters. We as a service better be ready for that because our motto is indeed Semper Paratus.
Well, no wonder the Coast Guard is the one branch of the military that Donald Trump wants to actually cut funding for.
Meanwhile, the city of Rome is facing water rationing amid the driest spring in 60 years. Italy's rainfall in 2017 is 80% below normal, and officials are weighing emergency measures in Rome, like water rationing and temporarily shutting off the capital's famous fountains. But some good news. In China, a solar panel farm that was designed to resemble a panda bear in order to appeal to and educate school children about solar energy has proved to be so popular that Chinese officials are planning to build at least 100 more.
Wow.
In Florida, the city council of South Miami has voted to upgrade its building codes to require solar panels on all new homes. That's thanks to the efforts of a local teenage girl who helped write the ordinance. And finally, two counties and a city located on the coast of California have filed lawsuits against the world's 37 largest fossil fuel companies, alleging that the fossil fuel companies knew that their product would cause dangerous climate change, like rising seas, and lied to the public about it. They're seeking damages to address the impact that rising seas will have on billions of dollars worth of coastal property and infrastructure.
Sell your stocks in oil companies now. Just saying. For much more on all of those stories and the many we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ooh, got distracted. I was sitting there singing along with The Tide Is High. It's 9 minutes before the final hour of the program this evening. This is The Horn, Thorn in the Side, Thursday for the 27th day of July, 2017. And let's run over and check in with John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Oh, hey, Bob.
What's happening?
Not too much. Hey, Monday night when I called in, man, I was a little beside myself. I you know,
happens.
Day,
it's okay.
I read through the comments section on a couple of videos, and you know, it kind of freaked me out a bit. But I had my bleach shower, so. But you know that they're getting ready to vote on that goddamn repeal again tonight.
Oh yeah. I've had that on in the background. They took a little break to pass the Russia sanctions bill. And then they got back to it. No, I particularly enjoyed. Did you happen to catch the remarks of Senator Chuck Grassley, who eats off other people's plates?
No, I didn't.
He said, "No, what?"
Oh, I was just gonna say I didn't catch what he said.
I did, and. And, of course, whenever I see Chuck Grassley, I always think, hey, there's the guy who eats off little girls' plates because of the story that Sister Carol Baker once told on the program. Yeah. About when he reached over and, like, I forget the particulars, but it was just really a revolting story.
And she met Jimmy Carter.
No, Chuck Grassley.
Well, yeah, wasn't she at the White House meeting, Jet? Jimmy Carter.
Girls' State or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember her talking about that one probably a good couple of months back.
But anyway, he said the Democrats are out there saying that, you know, we're going to kill people, and I wish they'd stop doing that because, you know, they said we were going to kill people when we did welfare reform, and we didn't kill anybody when we did welfare reform except for the people that we killed. I added that last part because people did die and have died as a result of welfare reform. But, you know, just remember, Bill Clinton shook that knuckle at us and said, the era of big government is over.
What was he trying to do? Was he trying to play to a Reagan? Was he trying to pander to Reaganites?
He was pandering to Reagan Democrats. And he was going along to get along with Newt Gingrich. Showing that he could still be a team player, even though they were trying to run him out of office.
And that was pretty much the last of the whole let's work together. I mean, people on the Hill used to actually want to work together.
But John, he's the kind of Democrat who believes that shit. And in point of fact, the poster lady for Clinton welfare reform. Who was held up as, oh, look, she got a job. Oh, look, her, you know, she's not on the welfare anymore. She died a horrible death a few years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And her family went to hell. But the neat thing is it's out of sight, out of mind, so that when, you know, if you kick a bunch of people off the welfare rolls and you never check in on them to find out how miserably they died, well, they didn't die. You know, if a poor kid dies in the forest and doesn't scream really loud, does a Republican hear it?
Right. Really?
Yeah. And so, you know, you can ask people. I mean, I've worked with groups who know who have sat and told us horror stories of what a disaster welfare reform was and still is. You know, I was in the Rippy Mart yesterday, and I saw this guy buying a Zero candy bar. You know what those are, right? You've seen them, Zero?
Yes.
It's like chocolate nougat covered in white chocolate or something like that. I don't eat candy bars. Well, I was reminded of the story coming from Georgia of the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Resources in Georgia, the woman in charge of you know, welfare proceeds for people in need in that state, and the story about how she went around and put a Zero candy bar on every desk of every welfare worker to remind them that they were to give out zero benefits.
Oh, what? These people are so fucking evil.
Yeah, they are.
That is so goddamn cruel. That right now with this whole healthcare shit, they're scaring the fuck out of a bunch of good people in this country right now.
Yeah, see what Chuck Grassley said, John, was that there was something wrong with people for being scared.
You're right.
But there's nothing wrong with them. They are not unjustly terrified. They are not inappropriately frightened. What is being proposed is, in fact, goddamned well horrifying.
Yes. Yes, it is. And, you know, like, they pass it off as like, oh, we're only going to cut a few things here to try to make some of this so-called moderate Republicans vote for it. But you know what also they're doing? Not only about taking health care away from people. Let's leave that aside just for a minute, although that's the most important thing. Also, what they're doing, too, is they're giving Trump a victory. That gives these people more power. That's what happens. We don't want them to have this victory. That's bad. Once they get this victory, and the for-profit media, the whole motion to proceed thing, they gave Trump and McConnell that victory. They said, oh, victory for Trump. They kept saying it over and over again. I just want to jump into the television screen and strangle those fucking bastards on the mainstream media. But, you know, yes, like, I'm not saying it's not important that people are losing their health care. I'm just saying they're giving these fuckers a victory to boot. They're voting
what you're saying is if they get the bit in their teeth, then it's going to be awfully goddamn hard to stop them, John.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, and that's what's going to happen. It's going to get the ball rolling. And because that's what a lot of people – I think that's one of the reasons why their approval rating is so low. One of the reasons is because they're looking like they're ineffective leaders, which they pretty much are. But because it's such a cluster.
And see, right now, it's moments like what I saw this afternoon when Grassley was speaking that remind me I could never be a member of the United States Senate. Because he was sitting there he was just standing there reading this speech that somebody on his staff had written for him, some true believer from the fucking Heritage Foundation or the Competitive Enterprise Institute or the Cato Institute or goddamn Breitbart intern for all I goddamn know. And he's just sitting there, right, standing there reading this bilious, mendacious horse shit. And I really, you know, because how do you do it as a member of the United States Senate? Of course, it was mostly an empty room, but how do you not stand up and say, God damn, you're a liar? Because, see, we can, you know, you can have a legitimate debate on policy. You can have it on procedure. You can have all kinds of stuff. as long as everybody agrees to be fucking truthful. The minute that one side goes off and just starts goddamn lying, it becomes a dumb show. It becomes a meaningless, stylized piece of performance art. He said, and the failing Medicaid system, and Republicans are going to give more flexibility to the states so that they can better serve. And what he's talking about is block grants. And we already know, John, that they don't even have to use that block grant money for its intended purpose. And then he said, right, and the states are going broke paying for the Medicaid expansion. That, too, is a goddamn lie, because the Affordable Care Act never goes below the federal government paying no less than 90% of the costs of the expansion. All right?
Right.
And is Iowa a Medicaid expansion state? I don't remember. But you know what? They're not going broke on Medicaid in Alabama because they didn't take the Medicaid expansion. And the same for South Carolina and North Carolina and Tennessee and Mississippi and Missouri and, God, the single largest uninsured population in the whole United States, fucking Texas. They're not going broke on Medicaid because they would have a lot more money if they'd taken the fucking expansion. I'm sorry, I'm swearing all over the place, but this really does get me.
That's right. Yeah, no, I love your passion.
I can't stand the goddamn lying.
Neither
and Chuck Grassley stood up there and proved himself, good Christian that he is, to be nothing but the purest of fucking liars.
Yep, that's right. And that's what all of them are. That's what. And another thing is, when they say the American people, when they say, well, like Trump tweeting yesterday, I guess it was, about Trump, about let's make the American people happy and repeal this. When they say the American people, when those words come out of these people's mouths, they're talking about the fucking wig nuts. Nobody else.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, and because I was sitting there watching it, and the same thing passed through my mind. The American people, and I thought, you know, you scurrilous bastard, how dare you presume to speak for the American people? The American people have said overwhelmingly, time after time, in poll after poll, that they like the Affordable Care Act, as long as you don't remind them of that one in their White House.
Yep. You know, that's a big dog. This is also, that's another thing, Bob. It's a good segue. This is also one big giant dog whistle. Because just the other day, you were talking about if Bob Dole would have signed that same law, pretty much, hold on, 2 points. First of all, like you said, if Bob Dole would have signed, because he was pushing that, I guess, in 96 or something, or he used it as his
platform. They pushed it in 93, too.
Right. And if they would have, if a Republican would have signed it into law, it'd be on the books right now. Now, that kind of brings up this other point where this is what happens when you compromise with Republicans, because Obama used their plan because he thought, oh, they're not going to bitch about this now, you know, because he didn't want to have to hear about it, I guess, instead of doing a Medicare for all. And this is what we get. This right here. The Republicans are so abortive. Their message and their ideology and everything about them, the modern day Republican Party, is so abortive that they will scurry to repeal a law that they would have otherwise been pushing if it wouldn't have been a black Democrat. And that's what this is all about. This is all they want to do. That's what the transgender thing was about denying transgender people to be in the military. That's what this is all about. Every single thing that Obama did will be undone because they hated him. I guess the only thing I can think of other than being a Democrat is that because, and I'm sorry if I offend anybody, because he's black.
Black becomes a force multiplier for their hatred.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
And
now they would have hated him if he was white anyway.
But this buyer tapestry of lies that Grassley wove, oh my God, He said that no one in America had anything but health insurance in name only. And he said that Medicaid delivers substandard care. Okay?
It's better than Medicare. It's better than Medicare.
No. I mean, it was crazy making. And then he said he thought he was being, I guess, clever or culturally relevant or something. He went into a digression about the pet rock, which is before your time, but I think you probably know about the pet rock.
I've heard of it, yeah.
It was a rock in a box. And
right.
People paid $7 or $8 for it because it was funny.
The scheme, pretty much.
Somebody made some money, but it was funny. And people, you know, people will buy in on funny, you know, especially, you know, stoned people. A lot of pet rocks, but he compared the Affordable Care Act coverage to a pet rock. And he said, you know, nobody in America, they thought they got insurance through Obamacare, but it wasn't really insurance. And he said nobody has insurance right now. I mean, it's moments like that that you really wish there was a deity up there with a handful of lightning bolts. Because, you know, maybe if there was, people would stop lying the way they do. You know, Republicans in particular. But the best one was his constituent who has written to him many times because of her sufferings. She pays $25,000 a year for health insurance under Obamacare.
How is that even possible? So she pays, $1,200 a month in premiums or $1,500? Now, for family.
Or maybe he said she pays $25,000. No, it couldn't be. It had to be $25,000 a year.
Well, I think that's a line of crock. There's another thing about this. It's not because of the law. It's because of the fucking greedy insurance companies. The premiums were going up before they were signed into law, even if that's true. You know what I mean? You can't fix greed. Greed is going to be the only way to fix this greedy shit is to do a Medicare for all system.
And so let's understand, though, if she's paying a little over $2,000 a month for health insurance, she's paying it because she has so much income that she does not qualify for the subsidies.
Right.
Okay? Because everybody doesn't get the subsidies. If you're above a certain income level, you don't get the subsidies.
Right. If you're above a certain income level, you don't get the Medicaid either, but if you're below, how does that work? There's a window, and if you fall in between that crack, you could be ineligible for Medicaid and ineligible for the
right. And so let's assume for a moment, John, that there's some legitimacy to his argument about this poor woman in Iowa who pays $2,000 a month for her family's insurance. That's family coverage, by the way. Okay, and that's a lot of money.
Always worth. It's always more expensive. Family coverage is always more expensive, especially if you have, you know, five kids or something like that. You got to figure you're paying insurance for all those people, so it's going to be more expensive, you know?
Okay, but so let's go at this from a systems analysis perspective. That's a problem. You've got people who aren't really wealthy enough to be self-insured or pay for their own insurance, for whom $2,000 a month is still a whack. But they make too much money for the subsidies. Here's two alternatives. One, let's scrap the entire system and throw tens of millions of Americans out of health care because the people with their ass in the crack can't get subsidies. That's the Republican option.
Right.
Or let's pass an amendment to the law that closes the crack and makes sure she gets subsidies too.
Oh, they won't do that.
In a just purely intellectual world, isn't that a far more elegant solution than throwing the baby out with the bathwater?
Right, but that also goes back to, you're right, but it goes back to, like I was saying earlier, They cannot have his law in the books. They can't. They cannot have Obama's legacy. It's all about that, too. There's a lot of that figure that is factoring in. And, you know, and it goes back to one of the reasons why they hate Obama is because their previous president that they had, a Republican president before Obama, was an utter disaster. I mean, I remember 2008, the end of Bush's term, last term.
Yeah, when the chickens came home to roost before they were supposed to.
Yeah, that kind of shit.
See,
you know, I remember that.
Bush's tax cut economic voodoo chickens were only supposed to come home to roost in about 2011, 2012.
Right.
But
the other whoever.
Yeah, whoever the next poor bastard was. But instead, it got rolling before he could get away.
Right, and to be honest, and I remember clearly, I couldn't find one person that admitted they voted for Bush. I didn't know one person that they were. All the people that voted for Bush were pretty much silent. And not to get off on that tangent, I just wanted to add that in. That's why they want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Is because one of the reasons because it's intolerable for them. They cannot have something like that. They want Trump's name on that bill, or a Republican president's name on that bill, and that's another problem, along with all the people that are going to be fucked. And then, well, they're getting rid of the employer mandate. What's going to happen then? Well, people who work shitty ass jobs, who are pushed around by their employer, like me, who make, you know, next to nothing, basically what I call slave wages. You're an indentured servant. These people are going to lose their health care because their bastard employer is going to say, "Oh, I don't have to pay for health insurance anymore now," and then they're all out on their asses. You know, that's another problem with this so-called skinny repeal. And you know, now you got John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and I think who the other guy is saying that the House.
Yeah, Ron Johnson's one of them.
Yeah. They're saying that if they don't – we'll only vote for this if the House doesn't vote on this. You know what I'm saying? Something like that. You might want to look that up.
No, I've seen the story already. We would only vote on this if the House promises not to just pass it.
Yes.
And
have you ever heard of such a fucked up situation?
Well, but it gets worse, okay? Because they said that after the insurance industry. Remember the evil goddamn insurance industry? After the insurance industry finally chimed in and said, listen, if you get rid of the individual and employer mandates, the whole insurance industry is going to fucking crater. We're gonna corkscrew in.
Yes. That's what's going to happen. Even
and yet the Republican, and yet the majority of Republican senators are saying, okay, we'll still do that.
Well, what they need to do, though, is if the people, let's say they get rid of the employer mandate, for example. If they get rid of the employer mandate and the individual mandate, all right, how about they just, and I'm just spitballing here, but how about they just say, okay, you're getting dropped from your employer because they don't want to pay for it. Here is a subsidy or something, or here's and automatically give that person that they're automatically eligible for a subsidy, or if they make even not enough to even be able to pay for a premium, then they can get Medicaid or something if it's expanded in their state, which of course they're probably going to slash.
Well,
they
John, they've bounced around every idea that they can get away with that doesn't involve Medicare for all, a public option, or universal single payer generally. For instance,
exactly.
The House the House plan says, well, you know, we're going to give you 59 cents. We're going to give you 59 cents a year to help subsidize the cost of you buying good free market American capitalist health insurance. We're going to give you 59 cents a year. Okay.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Look, you know what? I could say, but even mentioning this gives me the fan tods. I'm almost at the point that I could say, look, repeal the whole goddamn thing, okay? Because the American people are dumber than a bag of hammer handles. Repeal the entire Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And then, the minute that it's repealed, immediately introduce the same bill, only call it the Glorious American Exceptionalism, Republican, Trump-driven, cheaper, better in for America, God bless America, Health Insurance Act, with everything still in it.
The Republicans would love it.
And the Republicans could say, oh, look what we've done for the American people. And the House could pass it, and the Senate could pass it, and Trump could say, I've got my bill signing crayon out here, and I'm signing off on Trump Care, and you will love me forever for giving you health insurance, and it'll be the same goddamn thing.
That's exactly what my point is about Obama, that they don't want Obama's name on.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the pre-existing condition stuff, the stay on kids staying on insurance till they're 26 stuff. They'll have to tweak it. They'll have to make sure that there's no coverage for slut medicine in it. But otherwise, it'll be the same thing. It'll still pay for the limp-dicked Republicans to get their boner pills. Everything except the slut medicine will be in there. You know, birth control. Damn, I lost John. I hate it when that happens. But would that make sense? You can almost see him doing it. Now, this is health insurance. This is what health insurance is supposed to be. This is great health insurance. This is the best health insurance. This is some beautiful health insurance. Yeah, I know. Dadgummit, where'd you go, John? I was enjoying the conversation. Well, let's run over and check in on the stress line with Silent R. Lamar. Hey, Lamar.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
I'm right here. Are you right there?
I'm good. I want to apologize for the other night.
You have nothing to apologize for.
Well, I kind of felt that I put you on. I kind of think I touched some nerves because I heard the change in your voice.
No, you didn't touch any nerves. You didn't touch any nerves. There was no change in my voice.
Okay. But I'm like to say, like I stated earlier, you sure know how to push my buttons. I want to talk about something else, but I'm going to talk about what you just got off about talking about. Ooh, dude, I sound stupid there. The healthcare thing, nobody's talking about what Clinton did with the welfare, the change. Welfare won't be what it used to be. Haven't you noticed Republicans do not talk about what Clinton did? They're just trying to remove what Obama done.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, part of Grassley's remark, no, maybe it was the guy from, no, it was the guy from Wyoming that talked about the pet rock. Well, one of them. But either way you slice it, what they said was that was a reminder that, you know, back once upon a time, Democrats and Republicans knew how to work together for the good of America. And their only example of the good of America is what? Screwing poor people. Well, how about that?
Oh, yeah, it's all about screwing the poor people. But see, I like what Obama did. Obama took their program and gave it to them and forced it down their throat. They didn't even want to vote for their program. Because Obamacare and Romneycare is out of the Heritage family. Nobody wants to talk about that. But you know what? The Republicans are not going to be able to get rid of this because it's theirs. And they're trying to squeeze around and figure out how to get around it. Every time they touch something, somebody steps on their toes. See, the biggest part about Obamacare or the ACA, whichever you want to call it. The only thing I was pissed off about, he delivered the American people to the insurance company, gave us over hand and foot. The only thing good about what he did, he put restrictions on how you buttfuck us, okay?
No argument.
So while the Republicans right now are trying to figure out how to remove them, they're stepping on the toes of their care bearers, the people who smack their whips. They can't get rid of Obamacare. I don't even bother with it because he delivered the American people to the insurance company who pay the Republicans good money for bullshit that they want. And the thing that pisses me off, you and I are from the old school. If your car has a flat tire, you don't buy a new car. You just change the tire, right?
I think that's how it's supposed to work, yeah.
So why the fuck are they so upset about not fixing Obamacare? They know what the problems are. The problems are them. All they got to do is fix their problems, and we got a perfect system.
Well, maybe not perfect, but I get your point.
But see, I'm looking at it like this. We are going to have a single payer because the insurance companies are going to push for single payer because they're tired of this roller coaster bullshit, these crazy ass right wing teabags, whatever Republicans that come in, because they know the Republican Party is gerrymandered.
Well, I mean, that's
no matter who.
You mean that the Republicans know that their seats are pretty well protected because of gerrymandering?
Well, they're very well protected, but it's like I said last time we chatted. I don't have to vote because if you piss off enough white people who can't vote, you can't gerrymander that. If the Republicans all vote Democrat, what are they going to do? Raise a pitchfork and torch the party?
I can't answer that.
But see, that's where it is. See, you got to look at it from a black person's position. We weren't allowed to vote until 63 or 50-something without going through hoops. Black population flipped in 63, 61 to Democrats. We were always voting Republican. They can't figure out how they lost us. All they know, they don't like us. Hey, I don't have a problem. I've not been liked for a long time. Ain't nothing new. Ain't nothing new. But the point is, I mean, good job. The point is, I sit back and I just watch the festivities with my bourbon and popcorn because I'm laughing.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say bourbon and popcorn. That sounds pretty enticing.
Well, I know you're on a yogurt diet, so I'm sorry for saying that. I was so unfair.
No, that's okay.
But I'm just saying, history repeats itself. The problem is it doesn't repeat itself exactly. I was blessed. I mean, truly blessed. My grandmother on my mother's side was born in 1901, okay? She lived till I was 18 to 20-something years old. She taught me a whole lot of stuff, and she was Cherokee with Blackfoot. I know how to go in the backyard and grow a garden. I know how to raise fruit, food, and all this. I wish I had to learn how to preserve. That's the only thing I didn't learn how to do. But I don't see any different, like I've stated before, I don't see any different than now than 1929 because the Republicans want to take us back to a great America. They don't realize that America wasn't great unless you were rich.
Well, that's the Lamar. That's the only America that matters. Okay, Can we just be clear about that?
Uh-huh.
That's the only American. That's the only America that matters is the America of wealth.
But the problem is this, like I've said before. Vote your pocketbook. If you haven't won the lottery, stop voting against your best interest. If you don't reach, like when I have people come at me, especially Republicans, I love catching them. I'm a Republican, blah, 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 especially the ones out of Orange County or the Orange Cardinals we have out here. I said, do you make $500,000 by yourself? Do you make $700,000 by yourself? They say, no. I said, then you're living off of Democratic programs, fool. You don't reach their cutoff or benefit level to get that break you're looking for. And they don't. And while they're struggling to get to a plateau that they're not going to reach because they keep voting for reasons to stop them, I'm like this. If they put up a measure for me to stop a poor person up under me from going, okay, I'm going to use a wild number. I make $70,000 a year. They put up a proposal up there to say I can stop anybody from getting past $70,000 who's making $30,000. Excuse me, I'm at $70,000. That means I'm going to cut my own damn throat. Because I'm not 71, I'm not 72, I'm 70. I'm cutting my own damn throat. So how am I going to go ahead with that type of mentality? Just like you were talking about the mentality in your state. Understand the mentality of your state. It's your state that's got to save itself.
Well,
and with the help of you and other people like you, I'm hoping like God's hell you succeed. I really do.
Well, it's a tall damn order. It's a tall order, Lamar.
Well, I'm like this. Like my grandmother told me, God don't give you nothing you can't handle.
Yeah, I heard that. I've heard that a lot through my life, and
I don't. You're not in it by yourself. Stop being the Long Ranger. You got help. You'd be surprised how many people out there are going to help you when they're able. When the time is right.
Oh no! That's not what I'm talking about, Lamar.
Okay.
I'm talking about the fact that. There's been a lot of people in this region and in this whole country who have had that said to them over the years as, I guess, some sort of comfort. But I'm damned if I can figure out where it ever to be. It, you know, you don't get anything you can't bear until you can't bear it anymore.
Well, I understand that. That premise, because like I was brought up in the book, I understand that premise. But that premise is based on what the people you put in office are doing to you. Like I said, nobody's talking about Clinton and his three strikes, or Clinton and lock them all up, or what Hillary said. And remember, welfare is about to change. If he had not changed welfare, we wouldn't be in the problem that we are. See, what everybody does not remember is what Gore said when he was running for president. Put a lock on Social Security and welfare. It needs to be in a lockbox. These assholes who are in power right now want that money. And they're trying to figure out a way to get that money. And the best way to get that money is eliminate all the people who are allowed to get that money. And they're working very hard to do that.
What? Because some of the speechifying I heard earlier today involved talking about how awful Medicare is, and these Republicans are parrots who have largely been muttering the same phrases for the last 90 years.
Well, that's where we go back to what I stated. They want the American people to be stupefied so they can get away with their chicanery. They know the American people do not know what is owed to them. They talk about Social Security as a, what's their favorite word? What's that? Damn, I can't think of that.
Entitlement?
Yeah, entitlement. Excuse me. If you're educated, if you've been putting money in the bank for so many years, don't you feel you're entitled to it? America needs to wake the fuck up. Words have meaning. If they're going to tell you that you're not entitled to 40 years of putting money away in your retirement, that's your problem. No, no, no. That's your problem because I'm going to burn your motherfucking house down. We as Americans need to unite and understand that we are Americans first, our political party second, and our goddamn religion is ours to own for ourselves. You ain't supposed to be in it. And when we get back to that point, America will be great. None of this orange tangerine motherfucker.
Well, it's... I don't know what to tell you, Lamar. I don't know that we're going to get there because this country's not going to come together on anything until until it's desperate.
Well, you know what? Sometimes it has to get to desperate for us to see where
there's too many people out there right now, way too many people who do not view themselves as members of the working class or even middle class, to coin a phrase from, oh God, I can't remember who the wag was who said it, who view themselves as temporarily embarrassed millionaires. Sinclair Lewis, one of those folks.
Like a phrase that we used to say in the 60s, Bob. Eventually, you wake up from the damn dream, okay? So all those people who are dreaming about a perfect thing, unless you get up off your ass, ain't nothing gonna happen. If you think that gays and lesbians and all this other stuff is gonna hurt the military, you're gonna feel really shitty when you try to attack the gay compound and they kill all the stupid motherfuckers in charge. Because they come up with these insufficient bullshit reasons to keep us at each other's throat. Divide and conquer is the game. America, wake up. It's divide and conquer.
Oh, and I'm told that was John Steinbeck who said the temporarily embarrassed millionaires line.
Well, I know you heard that statement from the guy from the 1930, the priest or whatever his name. They came for the Jews, they came for the social, they came for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So that's where we're at right now. We are witnessing and living that right now. As long as we keep pointing fingers at everybody else and we don't show unity, they're going to pick our punk asses off one by one. The discrimination doesn't have a color. Because I'm like this right now, they're hating on transvestites or whatever. Then they're going to come after Mexicans, blacks, Jews, and then Muslims and blacks. What does the white ball, the bald-headed white fat man going to do when they come after his punk ass?
It remains to be seen.
But that's where we're going, my brother.
It may be. It may be, Lamar. It may be where we are going.
That's where we are going. See, if they allow racism or prejudice against one race, that gives them to go to the next and then to the next. There's gonna be a point where fat bald people can't get what's that purple pill bullshit?
Yeah, but.
Viagra. Then they're gonna really have a baby. But, you know, that's where they're going to go because as long as you keep the Christian religious... Yeah, give me your statement because I can't do the government or all that bullshit. I love that.
Yeah, but no, just go ahead.
Yeah, you do that so well. But, yeah, I have to learn that from you. So
what, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals, that?
There you go, my brother. That's who we have to be afraid of, that you've been warning us again. But when they wake up that they're along with that fundamentalist bullshit, bald-headed motherfucker thinking about that bullshit, when he can't get his purple pill to bump his old lady or to hook her on the corner, he don't have issues.
Issues. That's good. That's funny. He's going to have issues.
He's going to have issues because he's going to want to get his... Well, I'm going to keep this a family program. Well, I'm going to let you go, man, because I know there's other callers who want to get in. I just want to apologize and touch base with you. I did feel kind of bad about the other day.
Well, you got nothing to feel bad about, I promise you.
Well, you know what? You got some cooking recipes, man, that I got to have, man.
I don't have any recipes. I just do stuff.
I know. Well, see, I'm going to take advantage of it because you can't cook right now, so I'm going to rib or milk. Well, I shouldn't say milk. I'm going to inquire about getting all the knowledge I can get out of you, okay?
Well, whatever you want to know, I will happily tell you. It's not like they're state secrets.
Okay, man, I'll be trying to contact you some way or another. You have a good afternoon.
All right, you take care, Lamar. You can always reach me by email, man.
Okay, buddy.
All right, we'll see you now. Bye. Our buddy Silent R. Lamar calling from somewhere out Los Angeles way. I want to go back because I don't like it when I remember a story, especially a story about someone that deserves to be remembered, and I can't remember her. The woman that Bill Clinton flogged all across the country as the living proof of the success of his welfare reform. Her name was, and was is the appropriate verb form, Lily Hardin. This goes back to a May 11th, 2015 story published at Alternet by Zaid Jilani. We are approaching the 20th anniversary of the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Act. Jesus, can you get more Orwellian than that? The Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Act, also called welfare reform, which was passed by President Clinton working with the Republican-controlled Congress. This welfare reform law changed the terms of federal aid to the poor. Among other things, the law replaced aid to families with dependent children with temporary assistance for needy families. The new TANF program placed a strict time limit on how long the federal government will provide assistance to individual poor families and added various work requirements for recipients. The goal was to end welfare as we know it. And Bill Clinton campaigned on that in 1992. Zaid Jilani points out that the law was bitterly resisted by progressives who argued it was effectively ending a safety net that had existed for poor families since the New Deal era. And several Clinton appointees actually quit the administration over welfare reform's passage. But it passed just the same. Here then, the story of Lily Hardin. Standing over his right shoulder, Lily Hardin watched him sign the welfare reform bill into law. He had met her during a panel on welfare reform more than a decade before the signing took place. She'd spent 2 years getting AFDC benefits before she finally found work at a supermarket. And when Bill Clinton asked her what she liked best about being off welfare, she answered, when my boy goes to school and they say, what does your mama do for a living? He can give an answer. How do you hear something like that and not have your heart just go out? Because that's a statement of the dignity of purpose. Some would say the dignity of work. But in right-to-work states and in states with little or no worker protections like Arkansas, quite often there's damn precious little dignity in work. During her speech at the signing ceremony, Hardin talked about how her children pushed her to get back to work and how she did job training in Arkansas to get off welfare and into work. When I got my job, my son was so proud of me, but I made a deal with him. I told him I'm going to work every day and take my work seriously. And then she said that Bill Clinton was, and this is another quote, the man who started my success in the beginning of my children's future. Zaid Jilani points out that on C-SPAN coverage, she was fronted as former welfare recipient. Because that's what she was there for. Just like when Willard Romney and Bob Murray had the coal miners come out with the filth still on them from the bathhouse, they were props. Afterward, when he came to the stage, Bill Clinton said, I thank you so much for the power of your example, for your families, and for all of America. Thank you very much. Then when he was running for president in 1996, after the welfare reform bill had passed, he said, I still remember a woman that I met 10 years ago who said she wanted to get off the welfare so her kids could give an answer when they say, what does your mama do for a job? I met that woman again. She's got four kids. One's got a good job. One's studying to be a doctor. One's in technical school. One's an honor student in high school. I want to make more people like that woman, Lily Hardin. So I've got a plan to do it, and it's just beginning. And that's about the last that anybody heard of Lily Hardin. Until about 2005, when a journalist by the name of Jason DeParle wrote a book called American Dream, Three Women, Ten Kids, and a Nation's Drive to End Welfare. Here's a passage from that book. In talking about Lily Hardin, Bill Clinton had stressed how much her move from welfare to work would mean to her kids. Hardin did have a straight-A daughter who went to college. But the son that Clinton was celebrating was better known for his rap sheet than his grades. Between the time Governor Clinton first told his story and the time President Clinton revived it, I hate it when the internet's shitty like that. Just a second. Gotta recover it. Here we go. The son that Clinton was celebrating was better known for his rap sheet than his grades. Between the time Governor Clinton first told his story and the time President Clinton revived it, the teenage Carlton Hardin had already served 2 years for shooting some students outside of North Little Rock High School. In the past decade, he's been arrested 20 times for offenses ranging from disorderly conduct to possession of crack cocaine with intent to deliver, and he's gone on drug charges twice. Interviewing her, interviewing Lily Hardin. Lily Hardin said, oh, boy, it almost killed me. He got out there and act like you don't have no brain. She, meanwhile, Lily Hardin, had had a stroke in 2002. And the author says she wanted me to ferry a message back to Clinton asking if he could help her get on Medicaid. She'd received it on welfare, but it had been rejected now, and she couldn't afford her $450 monthly bill for prescription drugs. More sad than bitter, she said of her work, it didn't pay off in the end. Zaid Jelani then writes, Alternet sought to interview Hardin to see if her condition had improved. They remember writing in 2015. And learned that she died in March of last year, 2014, at the age of 59. She was living in North Little Rock, Arkansas at the time, a community where a fifth of the population lives below the poverty line. Eliminating the safety net for Lily Hardin did not transform her family the way Clinton boasted. The pride she had in getting a job gave way to the harsh socioeconomic realities of her life. And as Zaid Jelani points out, her story, Lily Hardin's story, is one of countless stories that can be told about the damaging legislation. The era of big government is over in our lives. Right. And so it was Lily Hardin that those miserable pieces of human excrement in the Republican-dominated Senate were talking about when they were talking about the manifest success that was brought on by Democrats and Republicans working together to reform welfare. Yeah, people died. And it wasn't just Lily Hardin. You know, when you can't pay $450 a month for your prescriptions, things will get bad sooner than you expected. And it's a goddamn tragedy. But it's only a tragedy if you're somebody who matters. And so Republicans can talk about their successes, but they're only successes insofar as they made it possible for Republicans to quit paying any attention, to quit acting like poor people matter in this country. And you know what? If they get their way and they knock off 10, 15, 20, 23, 25, 33 million people from health insurance, these goddamn soulless Republicans won't give it a second thought because out of sight, out of mind. In the ground, out of mind. That's who they are. It's the reality. This isn't something I'm making up. These are people who will do anything in their power to hang on to power and to make sure that the wrong people don't get their hands on any money or participate in that general welfare that the government of the United States established by the Constitution is supposed to promote. Maybe my rhetoric is too harsh. I'm perfectly willing to acknowledge that. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm talking too
bitterly. Maybe Chuck Grassley and Mike Enzi, maybe Rand Paul and Joni Hog D. Baller Ernst, maybe anointed future King of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. Maybe they really do love America. Maybe they really do love this country. Maybe. But I will tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that I have yet to see which part of America they love other than, you know, the executive class. Best I got. Oh, they'll talk about the common clay. They'll talk, and you know what? The common clay will vote for them in droves as long as they say things that unintelligent people, people who have been cheated out of their educations on the front end, think sounds smart. As long as they'll talk about how they love God and Jeebus. Well, I'm going to vote for that because I love him. How bizarre has the day been in the United States Senate before I came in here and got behind the microphone? They were debating something called the Strange Amendment. Oh, really? It was named for Big Luther Strange, the placeholder senator from Talabama, who offered up an amendment to make sure that anything having to do with health care reform wouldn't hurt the precious little fetuses. But it was hard not to realize that they were debating the Strange Amendment and figure that a few, you know, maybe when that was over, they'd start debating the batshit crazy amendment, and after that, they'd move on to the just plain fucking nuts amendment. Because that's where all of this is. That's what this is all about. It's about Republicans trying to do anything except what this country needs. I've heard Republicans talking over the last couple of days, and Iowa, they pick on Iowa. Well, there's 93, it was this morning, there's 93 counties in Iowa what ain't got no insurance company. And within 2 minutes, the same guy being interviewed said, there's 94 counties in Iowa. And I figured if they'd kept talking, he would have been up to 157. After the break, after that Wallet Hub commercial that shows the woman puking. You know what? If there was a public option, if there was Medicare for all, if that could even be, if that was even within the realm of possibility, there would not be one county in Iowa that didn't have insurance. Not one. Oh, and by the way, what about the vaunted goddamn capitalist free market? Why? Look, that's a market, isn't it? Why isn't there an insurance company that wants to provide capitalist health insurance for 93 or 94 counties in Iowa? Oh, wait. They can make money, just not enough money? Oh, I'm sorry. They're expected to pay money out when they take money in. Son of a bitch! Oh, that capitalism sucks, doesn't it? Sure was nice when the Affordable Care Act was providing great big horse gagging mule 30 mule team wagon loads of free money to the insurance industry, wasn't it? Oh, but it wasn't enough for insurance companies in Iowa. Like I said before, talking to John, the simplest answers are the most elegant ones. Here's a hint. No simple answers. At least not from this bunch.
Now, it's no guarantee, but if there was a Democratic majority in the Congress, maybe this time through we would have a debate on Medicare for All. Maybe the numbers could be shown that would bear out the fact that that is an actual solution to this problem. Maybe, maybe not. Damn sure not going to happen this year. Because even if the Republican majority was brought a Medicare for All bill and had it given into their hands from the loving hands of Jesus Christ himself, they would reject it. Because they'd be terrified that somebody who didn't deserve it might get something out of it. When, of course, deserving's got nothing to do with it. And there's not a goddamn thing about people deserving things there in the Gospels that they purport to worship. Damn, I've still got more stories. Oh, well. Maybe we'll get them tomorrow. Friday on the Front Porch comes our way tomorrow. And it looks like we're going to have a dramatic Friday on the Front Porch. Now, I know that there are we've got a couple of subscribers for the 28th of the month. Randy in PA is one of them. And that being the case, I know that, now, right now, we just have a $640 fundraising goal. But Randy and PA will knock that down to $590. And maybe it'll get down to $580. But that's the drama we're facing for, you know, we've still got the 31st on Monday. But for all intents and purposes, we'll either nudge the Norsky and lick the Lithuanian tomorrow or not at all. So, I love Friday on the Front Porch, whether we have a miracle or not. I love being here, whether we have a miracle or not. So, let's get together tomorrow. Thanks for joining in this evening. Thank you to everybody all of you who participate, sharing your precious finite time in this ongoing conversation. It is the most valuable thing in the world, your time, and that you share it is a profound honor. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to midweek pinch-hitting utility chat room moderator, all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Part of the fundraising we're doing is to pay the server bill for WhiteRoseSociety.org because we've got to do that now to help out Ben, who has never in his entire career, what is it, 15-year career running WhiteRoseSociety.org, never once has he sent a bill. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, at Coal River MTN on Twitter. Thanks to everybody who, with your financial contributions, keep this going. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.